What is up, guys, and welcome to another episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee. I'm your host, Tyler Babin, and I'm stoked to have you guys here. I'll be honest, I think like this podcast has become probably one of the things I'm having the most fun with and everything that I'm working on these days, and you guys seem to be enjoying it, so we're gonna make this more of a staple. And now that I have a few episodes under my belt, I'm really ready to start kind of experimenting a little bit with format and some different ideas. I don't wanna change or stray away from these being just really sort of, you know, down-to-earth conversations that I'm having with other creatives, but I've got some ideas in mind. The thing I would love to hear from you guys is, conceptually, are you liking it to just be conversations? Do you want to hear me experiment a little bit more? Do you want more AMAs? Let me know what you guys are thinking, and also who would you love to have on the podcast? Right now, I've been a little bit as my manager at Adobe, Julia, would say, I'm playing whack-a-mole, and I often am recording these podcasts like the night before they have to go up, as I'm doing with this intro right now. So I'm trying to get ahead a little bit, so anything you guys could give me that you want to see would be an awesome help. But diving into today's episode, I'm sitting down with Alex Gassaway. Alex is a YouTuber and creator based out of Long Beach, California. I was in LA last week while we recorded this podcast, and I got to meet up with her at her apartment. We got to record this podcast and have a deep sort of quick conversation on creativity and YouTube and sort of, you know, creating a lifestyle where you get to live on your own terms. This is really cool, and I really, really respect everything Alex makes, so I think you guys are going to like this conversation. And I would highly encourage, if you haven't heard of Alex, do a deep dive on Alex's YouTube channel. I think she's a really, really talented creator and storyteller, and I think you guys would really like the type of stuff she is doing. I hope you guys like this episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee. We're going to dive into it. This is Alex Gassaway. Welcome to Tuesday Morning Coffee. This is, it's funny. We just did your podcast, and I want to give a lot of context to the things going on in the room right now. We're in your apartment in Long Beach.
Correct.
We're all here for Vid Summit. Well, you live here.
Yes.
I'm here for Vid Summit. Yes. We're all going to Vid Summit.
I'm here only for, I only live in Long Beach, so that I can attend Vid Summit.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Financially, it seems like a good deal.
Yep.
We're in a room with a bunch of other amazing creators, and I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. We've been talking on the internets for a real minute now.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So I'm excited to finally be able to work on something.
Yeah.
I think you're a really amazing creator, and you're someone I look up to quite a bit. I think your storytelling style is really, really amazing, and I'm going to give a little brief intro on you before, but for those that may not know you, tell me, who is Alex Gassaway?
Ooh, who's Alex Gassaway? Well,
it's a lot of pressure, I know.
Online, I think I call myself creative founder and YouTuber. Okay. So that's the most succinct way that I've discovered how to describe myself. I grew up in Indiana, which I think is fairly important because I'm not really an LA person.
Okay.
I'm a very Midwest born and raised kind of person. But I moved to LA. I've worked in Hollywood a little bit, and just grew up wanting to work in Hollywood, and then that kind of transformed. You can watch my Casey Neistat video if you want to learn more about that, but transformed when I discovered this whole content creation space and telling a story and making an impact outside of Hollywood and feature films.
So is that why you came to LA? Was just you like wanted to work in Hollywood?
I always wanted to live in LA. I almost came to college here, but I ended up staying in Indiana. But yeah, I've always wanted to live here, to work in Hollywood. It's very good that I'm here. I'd have to either be here or in New York probably to do what I'm doing. No interest in Hollywood as a traditional sense of that career trajectory for myself anymore.
This is like, I'm going to immediately jump off on a random tangent, but I'm curious. What was your process like of moving from Indiana to LA? Mm. I think so many people, especially that are going to be listening to this, are probably living in like smaller markets and aspire to live in like a New York, LA, Miami, something like that.
Fair, yeah.
What was sort of your process like of actually making a move? Because I know moving from Florida to New York was both like financially very intense and just emotionally intense.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of obsessed with always these stories.
Yeah. Mine was actually kind of slow and drawn out because I really was very close to coming out to LA for basically film school, and that would have been in 2010, but I ended up staying in Indiana, and I'm very glad that I did. I met my wife in college playing basketball together, so that was very fortunate. And then I was going to move out here after graduating in 2014, but then ended up staying there for 2 more years because my wife went to grad school, PT school there. So I ended up moving Indiana to St. Louis, and then we just kind of made the decision together that we were going to move to Los Angeles because that's where I wanted to be and where I needed to be to pursue my passion. But that process is like, I think it's different for a lot of different people. It's either in the moment or you suddenly get this just overwhelming urge that you have to just do it. Maybe you've been thinking about it for a while and you just have to do it. And there are some really incredible stories with that. It's just like, wow, you just went for it, right? I think mine was, it was an inevitable move. I just kept delaying it, which is like a whole nother story. And all of my delays were basically because of relationships. But it's a big decision, and it's almost a culture shock. I think both New York and LA is a big culture shock from the Midwest
for sure.
In general. But I'd say anyone who's trying to get into one of these bigger cities, a coastal city or something, just got to save up. And eventually, like, the timing is never going to be right. You just have to go for it. I have some friends who are actually thinking of moving out here, and cost of living is really intimidating. It's also like your lifestyle just changes. You know, you just enjoy the beach and the mountains and the city, and you just change the way you spend your money.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love what you said. Like, there's never a good time, and there's never a good time when there's a million reasons not to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I will always kind of say, is that if you wait until you're ready, you're probably never going to get started.
Yeah.
And it was similar. Like, I had been talking about moving to New York since I was like graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like, I'm just going to move to New York, deuces, I'm out, Tallahassee. and it took a really, really long time. And it wasn't until I think I had a moment where I was like, you know what? If I don't do this right now, I might never do this.
Yeah.
And I might just like go down a path of life that I'm not interested in
going
down.
What a weird realization. I feel like we have those moments in our life, and I don't know what causes them. Like, I'm completely unaware of what causes those moments. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's now or never, right? Yeah. But I feel like it's a theme across humans. We have those moments. I have no idea what causes them, but it's like, it's something intrinsic. It's something just inside of yourself where you just realize it.
For sure. That's interesting. And that actually sparked something I want to go down. But before we go way too like high level, let's chat a little bit more. How'd you even get into making videos? Like, where did like the passion for film stem from?
Man, I have friends who work in Hollywood who, you know, talk about how they had a camera from the time they were 5 and they just ran around with their camera and wanted to be a director forever. I wasn't necessarily that kid. The first memory that I have of being interested in film is probably being around like 12 years old and going to see movies in the theater and loving watching movie trailers. That was my thing. I loved movie trailers. So once I saw the movie The Holiday, and she cut movie trailers for a living.
Yeah.
I think that was like a weirdly good representative movie for me because it was like, she's a woman, she's cutting movies, she's in Hollywood. I didn't realize this was even a job. You know, as a kid in Indiana, I never made the connection between there being someone who was cutting those trailers that I love so much. So that really sparked the interest. But I didn't start making videos really until my parents bought me a Canon 60D for graduation gift from high school. So in college, I was in the media fellows, like a media honors program. We had a student TV station. It was a Midwest college liberal arts university for situation. Sure. So I'm not going to say we did not have high tech situations. My Canon 60D was like a coveted tool around like the media building. But yeah, I just started making videos, and it started really with a lot of sports videos, because I just grew up as an athlete and I was a collegiate athlete. And yeah, so my first real video that I made was for the athletic department. I just like went around and filmed a bunch of different student athletes and created this. I was modeling it after a really cool film or a short video that I had seen online. It did not turn out anything like that video, but that was my first kind of effort into the videography. Into the VRV space.
That's so funny. You probably saw like the excitement on my face when you said 60D.
Yeah.
So my like high school graduation present is I just asked every like family and friend possible to like donate to like Tyler's camera fund.
Fantastic.
And it was gonna be a 60D. And then not to a fault of my dad, but my dad's like, you don't know if you're gonna get really serious about this video thing. Like, don't spend all your money on that.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting a T3i.
Perfect. I knew you were gonna say T3i too. It's amazing. Oh my gosh, it's still a great camera.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So you were into making videos, you wanted to be in Hollywood. How do we shift from Hollywood into YouTube?
Yeah, so I really dive into this in my Casey video, if anyone wants to get the full story, but it really was discovering Casey Neistat.
And tell me about the Casey video. Like, go in depth. I mean, we got time.
So I made this video. It's called Did Casey Neistat Change Your Life? And it's all at once kind of a story about my transition from that Hollywood dream to this now kind of content creation, YouTube, digital media space, if you will. A friend of mine introduced me to Casey Neistat, and I just, you know, fell into the trap of binging all of Casey's channel. And I didn't even realize that this existed until that moment. Mm-hmm. YouTube, as it still is to many people, I thought was just filled with cat videos and all the meme culture and all that stuff. So understanding that it was a possibility and understanding that it existed, and pairing that with my frustration in the lack of innovative storytelling in Hollywood at the time. I think it's definitely improving.
Yeah.
Just in the last 5 years, it's improved so much with representation and even just working with nonprofits. And like, Hollywood is doing a much better job at telling real, meaningful stories than they were when I was making this transition, basically. Yeah. But the idea that you can reach millions of people with a budget of $100 and a camera and reach them with that same impactful story in a week versus spending 2 years trying to get it made in Hollywood, 2, 6, 8, 10 years, whatever it takes you, for sure. that just completely enveloped me. And I was so excited about that and just ready to pursue that.
Yeah. What was Casey's response to the video?
To the video. He did comment.
Yeah.
I think,
I'm only asking because I have a ridiculous story for you.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to hear that. I think he said something like, this is really flattering, but beyond that, you made an incredible video. Just keep making videos, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
And he followed me on Twitter. So
there you go.
It's my claim to fame.
It's super funny. This just popped into my head as we were talking, and I completely forgot about it. And I'm surprised I've never told you this story. I went to a meeting at 368 with Gary and D-Rock Andy, who work on Team Gary, with Casey and the CEO of 368, and discussing like where the direction of 368 was going and things like that. Casey brought your video up in the meeting.
What?
Like, on a TV screen.
No, he didn't.
I swear to God.
Shit.
We were talking about like, you know, the future of 368 and the direction he wants it to go, and it's just providing a platform. And he like went on a big tangent about the video and like pulled it up on the screen. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So not to like increase the pressure on you or anything.
Thanks for sharing that. Thank you for telling that story. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. I think it's really cool, and it's a piece. I had seen it before that meeting had ever even happened. Like, it had gotten, you know, shuffled into my recommendeds, and it is. I mean, it's a beautiful piece of work.
Thank you.
And I think it's really cool because Casey inspired so many people, and It's super funny. I had followed Casey like way before he's ever started the daily vlog thing. Mm-hmm. I have Work Harder here. And then the day he started a daily vlog, I was like, shit, he's going to get really popular. And then I'm going to look like a fanboy that I got this tattoo. And I was like, I'm no longer a fan of Casey.
I have to shut it down right now.
I know, right? I was like, get this thing off. But I mean, I think you really, really did a great job of showing just what your experience was and how this other creator influenced you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's telling on the impact that he's had on people, but it really is, it just perpetuates beyond that. It's just how we impact each other. He just happens to be, you know, a very well-known storyteller and someone who's really changed the platform over the last, you know, has he been on there 10 years now? Something what like year that. Is it?
I don't know what day it is. So talk to me a little bit, because that video, I think, represents like a really good sort of, I don't want to say turning point in your channel, but it felt like one of the first videos that was like really your voice and you were like creating this big thing. And you put out a really amazing video a few weeks ago about how weird YouTube is and things like that. And you talked about those early days of the channel.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that frankly, like I'm going through also, like I feel like I have a YouTube voice that I only talk whenever like I'm in front of a camera and I'm like, shit, I got to get that out of the system.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the early days of YouTube and sort of the process and finding your creative voice.
Oh man, it's a hard one. And I, before I even forget that video that you're talking about being on YouTube is weird.
Yeah.
I think it's important for people who have seen it to maybe know that I wasn't even going to upload that video.
Okay. Why?
Like really weird, because I just uploaded it because I needed to upload something. And I had been spending a ton of time on this application for the Sony residency, basically, mm-hmm. the Alpha, Sony Alpha Female application. Yeah. And I was like, you know, this is okay. This is good enough. I'll upload it, you know, whatever. And the response was like amazing from everyone who saw it. There were so many positive comments and they're like, oh, this is so cool. I'm like, holy crap. Like I thought it was shit. So I think it's just important for people to know too, that like we're our worst critics and just do the thing, just hit upload, just make whatever you want. And like, as long as you're, you know, telling an authentic story, then I think people are generally going to have a positive reaction. But to go back to your question, the first days, my first videos, whoa, they really are shocking. Like I watched them back to make that Sony application. And I was like, what the fuck was I doing? This is terrible.
Yeah.
But it's really a process. Like you just have to, continue to create and hit upload. I know some people say, like just to make for yourself. And I think there's a time and place for that. Mm-hmm. But like early on when you're trying to find your voice, I think hitting upload is one of the most important parts of the process.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, then you're still just going to be criticizing yourself. There's no third party involved. It's a wild ride, putting your stuff out on YouTube. So I think daily vlogging was maybe the most integral part of me finding my voice, just because I was terrified of being on camera after, you know, making videos for 6 years. I had never been on camera myself. So that's a huge part of it. And practice is just the only way that you're going to truly find your voice. And I think your voice is always going to be evolving too. So, but it's really just it's when we say like find our voice, I think that can mean different things. But in this context, I mean, just finding your comfort and just being comfortable with being yourself in front of the camera, which is really hard to do sometimes.
How was the daily vlogging process? Because I've been like, I've wanted to go daily for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. I don't think Cody's in the room anymore, but I called Cody a couple months into the residency and he was like, go daily. He's like, just go daily.
Yeah.
And I've been like going back and forth. So I have a note on my computer that says we're going daily go November daily. 1st.
Okay.
And so my plan is to go daily November 1st through January 1st.
Okay.
Because I will then have made more videos in the last 2 months of this year than are on my channel altogether. And I was like, I'll just figure some shit out.
Yes.
But what was your process of going daily? What were kind of the highs and lows of creating that much content?
I think if I had gone daily the 365 days that I had planned, I mean, first of all, I'd have 250 more videos on my channel than I do now. But I mean, for me, I had to stop in order to finish up some videos that I was more passionate about.
Yeah.
But the 110 days of daily vlogging were, those were the times where it just makes you, it makes you get over that perfectionism. It just, you have to get beyond it. So that's the most important part of the whole experience for me. I think, you know, in terms of algorithm and what people are recommending now, like, you don't daily vlog for growth purposes, yeah, right? But daily vlog for personal growth purposes. It's the way where you, where you find, fine tune even what you want your channel to be, and it makes you just like crank through some of the ideas that you've been, yeah, putting off too. The things that you, the things that you don't want to do because you don't think you have the resources or the time to do, mm-hmm, it right, you just have to do it because you're out of ideas.
Yeah.
And sometimes those are, those are the ones that people are loving too. So it's just, it's a crazy process.
When you're going into making videos at that rate, how much of it is like pre-production, and are you planning kind of what you're going to do? And it's funny,
no,
but something that's been on my mind recently is I've noticed even the days where I'm like, I'm going to go vlog tomorrow, I'm like, all right, I at least need like a 3-act story kind of in mind to like drag this whole thing together. Otherwise,
sure,
I film like half the day and then I get discouraged by how poorly the first half of the day went because I'm just throwing shit against the wall.
Yeah.
And then I end up not even finishing like the last half of the day. So what was sort of like, did you have an idea of what you were going to kind of make the next day, or was it just pick up the camera and go?
I would say 8% of the time I knew what was happening the next day.
Okay.
And
solid percentage.
And the rest of the time I had a list of ideas that had gathered over time and, yeah, that I would add to throughout the week. And, you know, I would just choose whichever one I could make the fastest.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so fly by the seat of your pants. And then for me, I would even say daily vlogging, I don't even know that I would categorize what I was doing as daily vlogging. Mm-hmm. I was like daily creating. I was trying to create like a value topical video,
yeah,
every single day. And part of that spans from the fact that like I'm trying to build a software company and I'm managing like all these clients and going on shoots, and sometimes I can't do BTS the shoots, so then I get home and it's 9 o'clock, so I just sit on my couch and like just vomit whatever value I can, yeah, hopefully give the audience at the, right, time. And so it's like some of those videos are like incredibly boring because it's just me talking to camera, but also, you know, I get comments that that helped somebody some at some, yeah, point, you know. So it's just, yeah, pre-production, no. But what I loved about that too was before that, all of those topical value videos that I was making on my, mm-hmm, channel, I scripted word for word.
Yeah.
And so now when I do that type of video, it's much more me and much more authentic because all those daily videos that I was making, I could, yeah, never script or pre-produce. Mm-hmm. So I can just, you know, come up with an outline and talk to camera. And that also has led to speaking opportunities. I've spoken publicly twice now, which is my greatest fear of all time, which I think a lot of people share.
Yeah.
I never would have been able to do that if I hadn't gotten comfortable with that daily talking to camera, daily talking to 80 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question. That was a big tangent.
No, it's okay. The episode I did that actually released today with my friend Elliot, I think I might rename this entire podcast to Tangents because I just feel like that's what I do, is just go on and on constantly.
Yes.
So for me, I think one of the biggest things in a lot of aspiring creators, there's like this friction to like pulling the camera out and actually like attacking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the thing I think I've kind of definitely come to learn is, and I even made a video about this that I just said, start making something, because,
yeah,
I can easily just like sit in my room and be like, all right, I'm going to get inspired. And then I sit there and nothing happens.
Nothing will ever happen.
You just have to pick up the camera and go outside. Are you kind of in a similar sense, or do you really like to sit down and like plan things out?
I like both. I started daily vlogging because I wanted to get out and just shoot more.
Yeah.
Because I am more naturally, more instinctually, a planner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is sometimes really fun to just not worry about it and just shoot and just call it what it is. Like, this is my life, this is my vlog, like, whatever, you know. I just wanted to get outside,
because,
mm-hmm, I think oftentimes what we do as creatives, like at least for me, except on shoot days, I'm just sitting at my desk or standing at my desk inside for 16 hours alone, right? So that was really appealing, just like getting out and shooting. But yeah, I'm really, I like doing both. I'm more naturally an over planner.
No, that's good. I think I'm similar. I really, really love having a plan, but I hate making the plan, if that makes sense.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. We should be business partners.
Right?
I love making the plan.
Like, yeah. I hate, like, there's, like, I have constant, like, meetings about meetings about meetings. It's, like, getting us to the point of having a plan, and I'm like, fuck all of this.
Yeah.
But then we get to the day, and I don't have a plan, and I'm like, who let this happen? And I'm like, it was me.
That's amazing. I also like being able to, like, change the plan, you know? When something better comes along and you're like, oh, that's a much better idea than what we planned. Can we make it happen? Right. I think that's really important for what we do too, to just be able to do that.
So we sort of talked about process, daily, things like that. Where do you feel you stand now as like a creator, as a YouTuber, and the direction you see your channel going?
Yeah, I think after the Casey video, was able to take a little bit of time and rehash in my mind what I wanted my channel to be. Ultimately why I started YouTube was so that I could connect with and build relationships with creators that were on the platform. I wanted to be seen as a coworker, as a colleague, as another creator, because I do want to be in the space. I'm building this software, this platform to connect creators and nonprofits and brands to each other to collaborate for a cause. So in order to do that, I thought it was really important that I be a part of this community beforehand. I've been a part of it for years as a viewer, but it's like, you know, I am a creator. Why don't I start creating, right? Yeah. So then it was after that Casey video where I took the time, I was like, okay, what do I really want my channel to be now that I'm done with the daily vlogging, which I still haven't even announced on my channel, by the way. I've got like...
You just like, let it like sit for
a while. Yeah, I'm just like, I recorded a video and then I never edited the video where I told everyone that I wasn't daily vlogging anymore.
I mean, I think that's okay because I think sometimes there's too much pressure. Like,
Figure it out.
I probably
figured it out.
Like, let's hope that I actually pull this like daily thing off starting in November. But I don't think I'm actually gonna like announce it. This podcast is the first time I've ever like said it out loud. Nice. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm gonna say anything about it in November. I'm just gonna start putting out daily videos.
Like, that's almost sure more fun. That's on, more. You know? They'll figure it out just like they figured out that I stopped. You know, they will. These are smart people. Yeah. So I rehashed and I actually landed exactly where I started, which was creativity, business, and purpose. The only thing I really struggled with is whether or not to use purpose or impact, because some people really don't know what I mean when I say impact, because that can mean so many different things, as can purpose. But yeah, I think it's really just about helping. My channel is about helping creators combine those three things. So if that means creators who are still trying to figure out a way to make this their full-time income, if that means that, you know, you have creators with larger audiences that are feeling unfulfilled and feel like they want to have more of a fulfilling purpose and want to include some of those causes that they're passionate about. But it's like, how do you do that? Because it's there's such a split between these three worlds. So yeah, I just want to help creators figure out how to do all three of those things.
Where do you think that stems from? Because something that I liked the very first time we ever like interacted with each other on Instagram, you were like, let's make a video about something you're passionate about and like a purpose that matters to you. And that's like always exciting for me because I think so much of like social and things tend to be very selfish in a lot of ways. It's like, let me show you like what I am and what I'm doing. And you immediately are like putting it on someone else. You're like, how can we help put light on something?
Right.
What do you sort of attribute that mindset to?
Oh, that's a tough question. Sometimes I've asked myself this question so many times about just like why I'm passionate about connecting these three worlds. And I think it's because I know they exist in the way that my brain works. It's like I'm a connector. So I see these three aspects that can all help each other. We've already made the connection between business and creators and influencer marketing, if you want to call it that, right? Yeah. But there's this, and then you have businesses that, you know, donate millions of dollars to nonprofits and they have foundations, and you have all these consumers that really want to see businesses do better, mm-hmm. and improve the world with their commerce. There's this like lack of storytelling in nonprofits. Nonprofits struggle every day with storytelling, and they have some of the most powerful yeah. stories to share. So I see those three connected and I want to connect them, but I ask myself like, why? What you're asking is where does that mindset come from? And I think that passion first comes from like me. I think that passion first comes from me as a queer woman. I don't know what my mindset was before I realized that about myself, which was in college, which was in like 2011. I don't know if I had not come out, if I had not married my wife, if I would have that same mindset. But just going through the world with a different part of your identity that's, you know, that there is prejudice against me and there is prejudice against my family, has that impacted the way that I'm pursuing my career? And I think the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I'm a very privileged person, you know. So I think it a lot of times empathy comes from a lack of privilege in some way or form in your life. So yeah. Not always, and of course, there's so many people with empathy that are privileged in almost all the ways in their life. But yeah, I think that has something to do with that mindset.
All right. But last
yes,
question.
Yes.
And that was amazing. I think that's perfect. And my only follow-up, I think, to that is so many people say they want to help, right? That, like, their passion is helping people. But there's a friction on getting started.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you were speaking to someone who wants to be in a similar place, if they have something, a matter that really, really is important to them, how do you get started? Like, how do you get past the picking up the camera moment and just get the ball rolling?
I think if I'm understanding your question correctly, I think you're nailing it on the head. I think it's so hard to get started. Mm-hmm. And we live in a time right now where you see a bunch of stories and videos from a ton of great media companies online.
Yeah.
And they're spreading awareness about certain issues. And to me, the only thing that they're lacking is a call to action, a way mm-hmm. to get involved. You know, they're talking about an issue that's going on, let's just say the ocean, like plastic in the ocean. And then the call to action is share this video if you think we should have less plastic in the ocean. Whereas for me, it should be, here are the resources,
yeah.
go connect with somebody in your community and have at it.
Right.
Like, let's all tackle this together, which is where I think our massive army of creators and storytellers mm-hmm. can really attack this, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I want my platform to help answer that question of how do you get started?
Yeah.
Because right now we can't connect. We can't connect with each other.
Right.
It's really hard to find, for me, as somebody who works in the space, it's still hard for me to connect with a nonprofit mm-hmm. around a story that I want to tell.
Yeah.
Right? So I've got this new Collab for a Cause series. It's really hard for me to find a nonprofit for a certain episode that I want to do with this creator.
Yeah.
So that's the answer that my platform hopefully will have for that problem.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like right in this moment, Google.
Well,
it's so hard. But like also, you don't have to connect with the nonprofit in order to like share a cause that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
For instance, on your channel or on your Instagram, I see a ton of creators just like they have this banger of an Instagram post, and in their caption they're talking like it's a landscape, and in their caption they're talking about a nonprofit that they're aware of, like a very like
yeah.
big national nonprofit that they're aware of that says, hey, go to this link if you're as passionate about this as I am, you know.
Yeah.
There are a ton of ways that social media is now integrating causes and fundraising, even like Instagram stories. You can put a sticker on that
yeah.
will let people donate directly to the nonprofit of your choice yeah. or whatever. I don't know, it's just like storytelling is so powerful. We can just start talking about it. And I think
yeah.
the biggest thing is to not be afraid of like dividing your audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a ton of causes that everyone hopefully shares
yeah.
that like it's just better if this is improved, you
For
know?
Sure.
And it's just a really good way to share authenticity and your passions with your audience as well. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. And then also, I think it's easy to make things more complicated than what they have to be.
Yeah.
Like, if you genuinely care about, like, plastic in the ocean, like, go to the beach and pick up bottles.
Yes.
You
know what I mean? It can like, be that simple, right? Yeah, absolutely.
That's a kind of jumping off point. Alex, thank you so much for coming on this episode of
Thanks
Tuesday
for having
Morning
me.
Coffee. Where can the people on the internet connect with you?
YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. Those are my main platforms. Alex Gassaway, and Twitter is I am Alex Gassaway.